This is Soulful Living on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Terry Williams.
Hey, wherever you are in the world today, I welcome you to another 30 minutes of Soulful Living here at Empower Radio. Today, I feel a little like a kid in college who gets to meet their professor for the first time. I've been practicing shamanically for about 15 years, and most of my learning has come from spirit, from books, and one of my dear teachers here locally. And some of the teachers that I have worked with and studied are very well known throughout the world. And today's guest, Hank Wesselman, is one of them. His work, to me, is foundational. And his teachings have the capacity to really help people shift their life and empower themselves, empower their community, empower their world. He is a paleoanthropologist with a master's degree in zoology. He's traveled the world. He was in the Peace Corps. He has dug his roots into tribes in Nigeria. And he is also a shamanic practitioner and shamanic teacher. I love that he says in his 35th year of apprenticeship, because I feel like we are always expanding and growing. And enough of that. Welcome to Soulful Living, Hank.
Well, thanks, Terry. This is a total delight for me as well. You know, I'm speaking to you from the Big Island of Hawaii, and you know, hopefully everything will go well, but I do have an active volcano in the middle of my island, so if there's any sort of static, you might forgive.
Well, we were just talking a little bit before you came on about the energies present around you, and I would imagine that at times it's pretty incredible.
Well, it's pretty intense, and I find that my dreaming when I'm on the island is very intense. I have a lot of dreams where people from the past, people who are passed over, will come to visit me at night, like at 2 o'clock in the morning, and it's that they're like wraiths that sort of appear. And you know, this is part of what I live with. You know, the dream. The shaman is always the one who dreams while awake, and you know, part of the shaman's path is the discovery that we have the ability to go into this altered state of consciousness rather easily. Sometimes we discover this as children, sometimes we discover it as adults, and when we're in this expanded state of awareness, we can re-geography our consciousness into a different realm. You know, the traditional people, I've lived a lot of my life with traditional people in Africa especially. They view the world as being made up of two halves, a world of things seen and a world of things hidden. Mm-hmm. And they make no distinction between them. They understand that they present themselves together and mixed into one common reality. The shaman is the one who is able to see, is able to perceive the world of things hidden. And the first thing that they learn is that this world is inhabited. It's inhabited by spirits, transpersonal forces, you know, the spirits of the elementals, the spirits of nature, the spirits of the plants and the animals, the power animals especially. And then there are the spirits of the dead, the spirits of our ancestors. And as we turn toward the higher dimensional levels, we find the higher organizing intelligences that some people describe as angels or angelic forces. The shaman has always been the one who uses their own mind and their own body to create a bridge between the personal world of form and the transpersonal world of spirit. This is one of our birthrights, and a great many of us have this ability, but most of us have no idea that we've got it. You know, I say this with some deliberation, because in teaching workshops across the last 35 years and participating in workshops as well, I've noticed that non-tribal Western people, just like ourselves, with, you know, a little bit of training, a little bit of background, are able to access these hidden worlds. Mm-hmm. And so I send them off in my training workshops with a minimum of description of what they should see or might see. And they return with stories that would pass muster at any Aboriginal campfire. You know, this is quite extraordinary because we're going into the same regions that the Australian Aboriginals go into and the Lakota shamans go into and the Zulu shamans and the Yoruba shamans and the Mongolian and Tibetan shamans. We're going into these same regions and we're perceiving things in very much the same way. And this is quite extraordinary when you think about it, Terry, because, you know, it means that these dimensional levels have a reality and an agenda which is separate from the one who is perceiving them. In other words, they're real. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is something that takes a little getting used to in the beginning. I'm sure this has happened for you, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And one thing I want to kind of rewind to is you talked about it being in different regions and yet the same similarities in the way that we connect. You have been in Hawaii for much of your life and have been studying and deeply, deeply connected to a Hawaiian shaman whose practices were in some ways very similar to what you were originally, I say exposed to, but to what you originally witnessed when you were in Africa.
Well, as many of your listeners are aware, I created a book called The Bowl of Light. And this book is about my relationship with a Hawaiian kahuna elder over the last 8 years of his life. And we had extraordinary conversations during this time. At the end of his life, he looked at me and said, you know you're going to write about me, and that's okay. And so a year after his passing in 2004, it was kind of like I was sitting in front of my laptop and a credit card swipe went across the inside of my mind. And suddenly his spirit was there inside of my head. And so The Bowl of Light is a book that he and I really wrote together. You know, I wouldn't claim it's a channeled book. You know, my scientific colleagues have enough to deal with. You know, for me, to claim something like that would be very problematic for them. But in fact, it would not be inaccurate. Mm-hmm. You know, this book, The Bowl of Light, has received tremendous applause from the international community. And many people have observed that although this man whose name was Hale Makua, I called him Makua, although Makua has passed over, he's still teaching. And in fact, he has left strong footprints in my current book, which is called The Re-Enchantment, A Shamanic Path to a Life of Wonder. It's a kind of biographical book, I could say, autobiographical book. And many people have observed that it's kind of like an introduction to all of the other books that I've written. You know, it's, you know, just the way things work out. I wrote the introduction last.
Well, sometimes they say, you know, begin with the end in mind, and yours began with the end at the end, I guess. One thing I really want to say is that you talked about being channeled, and in my reality, from a shamanic perspective, I look at it as it was kind of co-written, because he was there with you in spirit as you were, you know, formulating the whole process of the Bowl of Light.
And, you know, he still is. He comes to me in my dreaming on a regular basis, and he's very pleased with the response that the Bowl of Light has received. You know, let me ask you a question, Terry. Have you read the Spirit Walker trilogy?
No, I have not read that yet. I started with your work with Sandra Ingerman in Awakening to the Spirit World, and have kind of gone back and forth and watched and read some of your things online through Sounds True, and I think that I need to delve into that because I see that you mention that in many things, and that to me is really more about your journey, isn't it? The trilogy?
Well, you know, this is how it really started for me. You know, I was out there doing research in East Africa in the Great Rift Valley, you know, doing Indiana Jones type work, you know, excavation, finding fossils, doing geology, doing archaeology. And I did this for years. And I was out there in the deserts, these whispering lands, that I began to have visions. And these visions, I didn't have anything to relate them to at the time they began. And so I kind of stashed them. I wrote about this a little bit in the first chapter of the Reenchantment. But, you know, in 1982, I began to have these spontaneous visions. Usually, if I could put it this way, on the heels of a joyous marital encounter. Okay, now in saying this to you, I'm revealing that Tantra, you know, sexuality is one of the great gateways to transcendent experience. And this is what happened for me. This is where Spirit Walker begins with, you know, the guys upstairs, if I could call them the guys upstairs with a certain tongue in cheek. The guys upstairs decided that they were, I guess they were tired of waiting around for me to get what I was really supposed to come into this life to do. You know, I had climbed the ladder of success. I was at the top of my ladder doing international research, grants from the National Science Foundation, working with the superstars of the international paleoanthropological community. I'm talking about the Fossil Man Gang. And then one morning, at 4 o'clock in the morning, I had this incredible dream in which I was precipitated into a visionary encounter with an incredibly dark and powerful tribal spirit. And I wasn't prepared for this. You know, nothing in my training as an anthropologist at UC Berkeley, where I did my doctoral work, nothing prepared me for this experience. And it was the inception of a whole new part of my life. You know, I realized that I had climbed the ladder of success and I was top of my field. But the ladder was leaning against the wrong wall.
It was a materialistic, in essence, it was definitely materialistic.
Try to work my way up.
Oh, I said it was an earthly climb. You know, the success that you were achieving was an earthly climb and very materialistic. And all of a sudden you're getting thrown into a new spiritual realm that, of course, they're not going to teach at University of Berkeley. No way. Not then.
Well, you know, what happened when I moved back to Hawaii in 1985-86 is I began to have an ongoing series of visions. They usually happened at 4 o'clock in the morning and often on the heels of a joyous marital encounter in which I made connection with the soul and body of a man who lives in the future. This is a man who lives somewhere on the coast of North America, approximately 5,000 years after the collapse of Western civilization. And
wow.
If I've got this right, and he's the one who figured this out. If I've got this right, he may be one of my descendants, one of my descendant selves. And when I connected with him, he was in the process of leaving his community on a journey of geographical investigation into the interior of the lost continent of America. Because when his ancestors arrived on the coast from the home islands of Hawaii, about 150 years before I connected with him, there were no people, there were no cities, there were no freeways. There was tropical forest covering everything. And the Central Valley of California is inundated with a marine transgression. And the sea levels, you know, this sort of brings up greenhouse warming's worst case scenario. The sea level has risen perhaps 300 feet. and all that we accept as the given is gone. And when I first had these experiences, it was like I was him. It was like I was merged with him. I could understand what he was saying through his understanding. I could tap into his memories. The Spirit Walker books, and there are three of them, Spirit Walker, Medicine Maker, and Vision Seeker, are something quite extraordinary. I've never read anything else like them. They're about time traveling. It's kind of like Indiana Jones, time traveling into the future and encountering something that he never expected to find. That's what the Spirit Walker trilogy is about.
Listeners, wherever you are, I encourage you to check out the Soulful Living page at Empower Radio and dig in to Hank's work. His work is amazing. His trilogies and all of his books are really just introductions into the work that he does in the world. He has various workshops that he offers as well. And so, you know, you mentioned this Indiana Jones, and as I was reading the Reenchantment and in the very beginning, that was kind of what I was foreseeing. You know, I'm like, okay, this is Indiana Jones. This is the work that that his story could have been based upon, Indiana Jones. You worked with archaeologists who discovered Lucy. You've traveled all over the world and done so many things, and yet the stories that you share from your own shamanic journey are absolutely incredible and inspiring for anybody that wanted to walk the shamanic journey path. What is a shamanic journey?
Well, the journey is actually an ancestral form of meditation. It's a form of meditation. There are three great gateways to transcendent experience. Meditation, which shamanic journey work is, tantra, which I've already sort of mentioned in passing, and trauma. Believe it or not, people who've had trauma, you know, often are precipitated into a classic out-of-the-body experience or a classic near-death experience. And these are very shamanic in nature. There's quite a literature on this now. You know, this is not sort of make-believe anymore. This is real. But in terms of shamanic journey work, the journey is, let's say, a strongly focused intention, often amplified by drumming or rattling, sometimes by entheogens, in which the individual can re-geography their conscious awareness into the spirit world, connect with the spirits that reside there, and have an absolutely extraordinary experience. I mean, this is what shamanic journey work is all about. And it's extraordinarily easy to learn. Being in a training workshop, let's say, for a weekend, a day, or 5 days, which is my preferred, I can give people a total immersion experience into this ancient method. And people come back and their lives change. Their lives change dramatically because they really had a look at the great mystery. They may not understand it, but they've experienced it. And once you've had the direct experience, it's all about personal transformation. Don't you think? This is what you've discovered in your own work.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you mentioned a little bit earlier something about the path of kind of your direct revelation and directly experiencing what shamanic work is all about. And I look at it as when I first really understood what was experiencing in my life, what was happening, that it was an opportunity for me to transform my own life. And in the process, those around me could experience a transformation along the way. It is deeply transformational, and it starts 100% from the inside with that connection to spirit or spirits, yeah, or, you know, higher spirits, higher self.
There are four sort of levels of spiritual awakening, and I've written about this in some of my papers, which are published in various books, including the book with Sandra Ingerman, I might add, Awakening to the Spirit World. Mm-hmm. That's really about the shamanic path of direct revelation. You know, the first stage is belief. And beliefs, you know, you can have different kinds of beliefs. You can have spiritual beliefs, you can have mythic beliefs, you can have mystical beliefs, you can have magical beliefs, you can have rational beliefs, you can have scientific beliefs. And beliefs are great. You know, they're very sustaining in the short term. But there's not much growth in the long term. And so eventually beliefs fail to compel us. And we kicked up into the next stage, which is faith. Faith soldiers on when our beliefs fail to compel us anymore. But faith can take you in two different directions. In one direction, it spirals you back down into belief. And that's what fundamentalism is all about. That's what the whole born-again phenomenon is all about. That's what the whole evangelist Christian thing is all about. Mm-hmm. In the other direction, faith can take you up the hill, and up the hill lies direct experience. And when you've had direct experience of spirit, when you've had that awesome jolt of the real thing on their home ground, it changes you, and it takes you to the fourth and final stage, which is personal transformation. And that's really what this is all about.
Absolutely. So we have just about 5 minutes left here, and I would like for you to share, like, what was your initial experience? So when you were in Africa, what was your first real experience that shifted you from maybe that place of faith to a direct experience? What was your first experience of that, like, outer body moment?
Well, I was doing an excavation of a site which was more than 3 million years old. And I was out in the desert with three African men. Two of them were Wakamba tribesmen from Kenya, and the other was a Dasnich tribal man from that region. I'm talking about the lower Omo Valley, north of Lake Turkana, in southwestern Ethiopia. And this Dasnich man was a shaman named Atiko. Now, I knew about shamans, but, most of us, you know, we think, you know, well, you know, maybe it's true, maybe it's not. But Atiko, you know, he and I formed a friendship which was ongoing. He's actually passed over now, but mm-hmm. I do have connection with him in spirit. But on this particular day, this was in August in 1972, it was hot. It was about 115 degrees. And I began to get this creepy feeling that I was being observed by something. Now, listen, I was out there in the desert, and when you're like 100 yards from your Land Rover, there are lions, there are leopards, there are hyenas, and there are buffalo, and they're all dangerous. So when something is looking you over, you know, this is kind of a creepy thing.
Right, you're hoping you're not prey.
Day, you know, this feeling came over to me in a very strong way. And I remember standing up slowly and looking at Atiko, and he was looking at something off to my left. And so I slid my eyes in that direction, and I saw something. It was big. It was about 6 feet off the ground. And as I looked directly at it, it was as though it stepped through a tear in the fabric of the air and zipped it closed from the other side, leaving a momentary wrinkle that straightened out, and then it was gone. So I'm thinking to myself, maybe it's time to go back to Nairobi for a beer. And so I looked over at this shaman, and he was looking at me. And I knew that he knew that I'd seen it, and I knew that he'd seen it, and I knew that he knew, and so forth and so on. So I looked at him in Swahili, and I said, Atiko, kwanini, what was that? And he gave me this very measuring look, and then he smiled, and he pointed it directly where it had been. And he said a single word in Swahili, Shaitani. Shaitani is the Swahili word for spirit. Mm-hmm. But in those days, I didn't believe in spirits. I worshipped solely at the altar of science. But this episode haunted me for years, and eventually it propelled me back onto the shaman's path.
Well, I, for one, am extremely thankful that you arrived on that path, and we're out of time. We only have about a minute left. I want to thank you so much for being here and sharing your gift with us. We could probably do another 9 shows and still not be caught up, so I'm hoping that you'll join me back here. Hank, if you could leave the listeners with one thought to take out into the world to elevate their soul or their spirit, what would that be?
Well, my friend the kahuna, Palemakua, used to say that our job as modern mystics is to love all that we see with humility, to live all that we feel with reverence, and to know all that we possess with discipline. And that includes self-discipline. This is what our path is as transformationals. That's pretty good, don't you think?
I think that was beautiful. And thank you so much for being here with me today. I offer you a deep bow, transcending time and space. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Aloha.
Aloha.